to everybody. Usually what I find is even for people who don't have biological children, they're mothers to someone. So the ladies are mothers to someone. I, working at the school, I'm mother to a lot of kids that aren't mine, but I think of them as mine. So happy Mother's Day to all the ladies out there in however way you mother other people. Our announcements for today are typical ones. We'll have a Saturday morning retreat at 10 o'clock via Zoom with Patricia. So if you're interested in that, you can certainly log into that. This Wednesday will be the men's group at Jim and Sylvia's house. So any men that might be interested in attending that, it's a pretty special thing. So we encourage you to make time for that and spend some time just figuring out life together as men and how that looks. Working through some struggles probably and how we can get over that. This Wednesday will also be the book study via Zoom, working through the book called The Cure. So if you're interested in attending that, you're welcome to, even if you haven't thus far and you just want to get connected, you can certainly tap into that via Zoom as well. All the links are on the website. And then the last Sunday of the month will be our youth group for our kids, grades 7 through 12. So any kids out there that want to come to that, we're happy to have you. So that's it.
For the moms who raised us up, gave us love, and made us strong. For the praying moms who don't always know what to do, but always know who to talk to. For the hurting moms who've loved and lost, but never given up. For those who never got called mom, but who cared for us all like a mom would. For the young moms who became moms sooner than expected and gave it all they had. For the single moms who tirelessly and courageously learned how to do this on their own. For the stepmoms and the stand-in moms who rose to the occasion and loved us well. For the working moms, the stay-home moms, the cooking moms, and the takeout moms, thank you for teaching us how to walk, how to learn, and how to make a difference. For taking care of us when you barely had enough time to take care of yourself. For comforting us when we felt alone and afraid. For lifting us up when others put us down. For the rides, the meals, the laundry, and the birthday parties. For the years, tears, laughter, and love. It's not enough, but we want to say thank you. Thank you for doing for us what we could never do for ourselves. We love you. We honor you. We remember you today. Happy Mother's Day.
I have another video for you.
Oh, you don't have to wash your hands. I have so much time to myself. Hey, walk away when I'm talking to you. My kids really respect my privacy. When this timer goes off, please turn it off and do not tell me. Thanks. Here, can you use up all my battery? Don't call me when you get there. I don't want to know where you are.
It is just too quiet in this car.
Okay, we're about to leave for church, so if you're going to make a huge mess, you better do it now.
I don't know. Your dad usually does everything around here.
All of these people are such good drivers.
Eating dinner is completely optional. Hanging up your towel is completely optional. Flushing the toilet is completely optional. Okay, this time, can you smile more like a crazed lunatic? Hey, you want to dig through the fridge for the fifth time today? I'd definitely rather be here than at the beach. I am loving the look of these chips on the floor. I am loving the smell of your feet in my face. I am loving this back pain. Get a massage, ew. No thanks. Take anything you want from my closet and don't worry about putting it back. Don't look at the camera. Look over there. If your sister takes your toy, just give her a good smack on the head. Hey, come drink that grape juice in here on the carpet. It's dinner time. Everybody come get a snack. Hey, did you know you can wear the same pair of underwear all week long?
Dear God, amen. All right, sometimes we take the kids, but we're not going to today. I don't know if you guys who take the kids knew that, but we're going to sit with our moms today. All right, I'm going to try and keep all this together because there's lots of emotions on a Mother's Day. A, happy Mother's Day, everybody. B, it sometimes is a really complicated holiday, right? We have two here who are spending their first Mother's Day without their mom. And we love you. We love you. It's part of what a community is. We love people in the middle of that. So we are respectful of that. We are respectful of where we are. And in my prayers today when we were quiet there, my prayers were that Jesus meets us wherever we are on that mother's spectrum, where we are in there. Jesus comes and gives us peace and healing in the middle of that. Mother's Day is also awesome. Where we get to love and where we get to celebrate and where we get to appreciate the people who have meant so much to us. And this is where it comes apart for me. I think about my mom and I think about the mother of my boys and those two who they have taught me more about following Jesus, about love, about generosity. Get her. I can't even look at her. Sheesh. I wouldn't even be anywhere close to the man that I am today without them. And I can't possibly begin to express my gratitude. Two, maybe it's three by now. I see Mother's Day very, very similarly to the way that I see Father's Day, which we call Bull Elephant's Day. Yet I know that we cannot call it an Elephant's Day. So, I also look around and I see the women who have cared for us, who have guided us, who have taught us so much. I can't stand to look at you either. So I think about you all and taught us how to love each other. So I thank you, all of that. What I know, and this is my promise from here on out, we don't often take a really big deal about holidays. But there are some that we do, and Mother's Day has been one that we traditionally have not done anything about, and that is my fault. That is our fault, and that gives a message that is not in line with the deep reverence and respect that I have for women and mothers, and I guarantee you this will be the last year that that doesn't happen. I assure you that from here on out, Mother's Day will be treated as, and Exodus says, treated as holy because it's holy. Treat it that way. These things are holy, so treat them that way. You are holy, and we will treat you that way from here on out. I apologize for the previous 10 years, and I assure you that it will not happen again. So, happy Mother's Day, everyone. All right, let's move on. And let's be quick about it, because Doctor Strange came out this weekend. So we're going to go see Doctor Strange today. So let's pack it up. All right, Matthew. Matthew 7 is where we are. And just so that you know, these pack of verses, when I was planning, were one day, was just today. And now it has become four. It has become the month of May, and who knows if that's where we'll stop, because there's so much to talk about. So, Matthew 7, verse 7. And if you happen to have a Bible that you pulled off the thing here, get a pen and circle a couple of words in it. Verse 7, ask and it will be given to you. Circle ask. Seek and you will find. Circle seek. Knock and the door will be opened to you. Circle knock. For everyone who asks receives, the one who seeks finds, and to the one who knocks, the door will be opened. This is very, very exciting to us, isn't it? But what this does not mean is that we will get everything we ever wanted. Has anybody ever heard of Janis Joplin? She has a song that goes, "Oh Lord, will you buy me a Mercedes-Benz?" That's not this. Okay? That is not this. It's not your $1 million. It's not our new job, our promotion, the car that we want, the girl or the guy that we want. It's not everything that we've ever dreamed of. And if I just ask enough, maybe that's what I'll get. But I asked God for the million, and I never got it. That's not exactly what's happening here. And there's the other side of this, is maybe you're familiar with a kind of Christianity where God fulfills all of our material needs, right? If we just have enough faith. And if you look it up real quick, there's a TV preacher who's asking God for his fourth private jet, because that's what we need, right? And they're using these verses to justify that. So it's kind of an interesting thing that's happening with these verses. So before we dig in to ask, seek, and knock, here is one of my least favorite stories Jesus tells. And I call it the parable of the super annoying friend. And it's in Luke 11. Then Jesus said to them, "Suppose you have a friend, and you go to him at midnight," which is no friend at all, if you ask me. And say, "Friend, lend me 3 loaves of bread. A friend of mine on a journey has come to me, and I have no food to offer him." And suppose the one inside answers, "As I would, don't bother me. Maybe you should have some bread in the house. The door's already locked. My children and I are in bed. I can't get up and give you anything. I tell you, even though he will not get up and give you the bread because of friendship, yet because of your shameless audacity, he will surely get up and give you as much as you need." You got to picture the story Jesus is telling is this annoying person next door is banging on the door. And you say, "Go away. Go away. I'm not giving you any bread." And he keeps banging. "Come on, I need that bread. I need the bread. Somebody's here. Bang, 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 bang. Go. Bang, 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 bang." Finally, he opens the door. "Fine, take the bread." And Jesus sees that as something good. That's a positive thing in this story, which is why I don't like it at all. The second part is, midnight is no time to come to my house. Okay? I am well in bed by then. I am much too old to be up at midnight. Shameless audacity means literally without shame. The word is anaidia. We're not going to talk about that because it's tough and it's not fun to say at all. And without shame, shamelessness, shameless persistence. And the interesting thing that it adds there, the Greek dictionary that I use, says, as in greed. That's interesting, isn't it? But we won't even talk about that. Quote, unembarrassed boldness. So, now, all of these things will come together because it's kind of the same when we're asking, seeking, and knocking. There's an awful lot to unpack in this. So, first, this shamelessness, this unembarrassed boldness has, one, an increasing intensity. We're asking, we're seeking, and now we're knocking. You see how it's going up each time. This shows what's called an active faith. The neighbor doesn't sit and wait passively for someone to open the door. We don't sit and wait passively. We knock. Okay? And this reveals a relentless persistence. Those are the big three things that we're talking about in this passage. So, David Instone Brewer says, imagine the following. Someone who wants a cup of water simply standing and waiting for it, without asking the person nearby who can give it to them. Someone who's lost a ring simply waiting for it to reappear, without looking for it. And someone who goes to visit a friend simply standing at their closed front door without knocking. I love that picture. Just standing at the door, waiting, without knocking, hoping they might happen to open it. I think it's funny, and I think it's a terrific picture, and yet we do it all the time. When somebody in my house, I have this thing, it's such a passive-aggressive thing, and I'm kind of embarrassed about it, and it's a big joke. When my boys go to the kitchen to get themselves something, I just sit and wait for them to bring me something. And then when they don't, I go, you couldn't ask? You couldn't bring me one? That's who I am. I'm just standing at the door hoping that somebody opens it. My boys don't care if I want anything from the kitchen. But yet I try and make them feel guilty. It hasn't yet. Sam turns 17. I'm hoping that this year is the year he gets it. I doubt it, though. But the thing is, it exposes me as kind of ridiculous, right? But yet, we do it all the time. We passively wait for God to bless us or make a way, right? We passively wait for the new job. I often mention the guy that I used to work with who used to say, I said, man, you hate this job. Do something else. And he would say, I'm waiting for God to bring me something else. Well, what are you doing? Are you sending out applications? Are you sending out resumes? Nope. God's going to bring it to me. And then 2 years later, he quit the job with no job to go to, finally. And then he got a great job. Anyway, we won't talk about that guy anymore. He's really a great dude, though, I got to tell you. Anyway, there is a difference between patience and passivity, right? We all understand the difference between patience and passivity. It looks exactly the same, and it's sometimes really, really, really hard to tell the difference, which is why over and over the relationship that we're having with Jesus is a with relationship. We are walking with Jesus, which is how he can help us, guide us into telling the difference, discerning the difference between whether I'm actually waiting patiently or if I'm just passive. If I'm just passive, like Adam who stands next to Eve while the tempter tempts her and causes the fall. And then she gives some to Adam, who it says in the scriptures was with her. That's the difference between passivity and patience. Okay, are you with me? I don't like this neighbor. I don't like this neighbor banging away. But the truth is, he really, really, really wants the bread. He really wants the bread. Right? It's almost as if Jesus was telling his version of the joke about praying for a lottery win. You know the punchline, God says, meet me halfway, buy a ticket. Right? There's another story that I've heard, which is it's raining, and there's a flood happening, and the guy is everyone's evacuating, and somebody, they come by on a truck. And when we were going, the National Guard came through and got everybody out. So the National Guard comes in and says, hey, get on, we're evacuating. And he says, nope, my God will save me. And then the water keeps rising, and he gets on his roof, and here comes a boat. Hop in. Nope, my God will save me. And then a helicopter comes as it keeps getting higher and higher and higher. And they say, come on, can we get you? And he says, nope, God will save me. Well, he ends up drowning, and he goes to heaven, to pearly gates or whatever you want. And he says, why didn't you save me? I said you were going to save me. And God says, I sent you two boats and a helicopter. Right? It's that thing. So Instone Brewer says, God wants to help us, but first we need to do something. This is going to hit a little close to home. The person who wants their prayers answered has to pray them. Right? Doesn't that sound totally logical? Yet, right? The question is, are we praying? Are we praying? James 4:2 says, you do not have because you do not ask God. Are we praying for these things, or are we just waiting for God to do something for us? There are so many times where I think, I wonder why God doesn't do this. And then hopefully nobody ever says it to me, but if they'd say, well, how long have you been praying for? I would have no answer to that, because I've never even thought to bring my prayers to God. Because sometimes I get this silly thing that thinks I'm selfish, or thinks I'm out of God's will, or thinks God has bigger things to do. No. God's big enough for you, loves you. So, are we praying these things? And second, how would we know if God even answers our prayers if we never pray? How do we know that? Has anybody ever heard of a prayer journal? Does anybody have a prayer journal? I have a friend who writes down all of her prayers. She writes down all of her prayers, and then when they're answered, she goes back in her journals and circles it and puts the date as to where it was answered and how it was answered. I can't do that. Instead, I stand up here and say, sometimes God doesn't answer prayers. Maybe he does. Maybe he's answered every one of your prayers. You just don't remember them, because who knows what they prayed about 5 years ago. 30 years ago, I wasn't praying for Angel. I wasn't praying for anything. And I wouldn't even know if I was. There are those times we now pray for our boys and the women they're going to be with. We pray for their wives ahead of time. Now, what if that woman comes along and I don't remember. We prayed for them. What a cool thing. What a cool celebration when God comes through on that kind of thing. Right? Except for we don't know, because we haven't actually prayed the prayer. Now, but there's a but. It is a request. Ask, seek, knock. It's not push, kick in, demand. Okay? It's a request. It lacks certainty. And we don't like that, do we? We don't like the uncertainty of things. It is not the name it, claim it theology. It is not. God is not a vending machine, and this is not Walmart, where we take what we want up to God and we pay the money, we do what we have to do, and he gives it to us. This is not that. And if we see it that way, if we see faith that way, this is a very problematic passage, isn't it? Isn't it? When you're part of a name it, claim it, or this kind of vending machine situation, I've told this story before. I remember going to a church 20 years ago, 15 years ago, and someone had cancer, and they called them up, and everybody put their hands on them and said, if you have enough faith, you'll be healed. All we have to do is ask. and if you have faith, you'll be healed. And a month later, that person passed away. There was a funeral, and now everybody has to deal with that, because we point to Matthew 7 and say, you say ask and I'll get it. You said if I have faith, you'll do it, right? So this is something very, very different, because people don't always give you what you ask for, right? You don't always find what you look for. I can attest to that, because we have socks in our house that are somewhere, and they're never found. And some doors stay shut no matter how much we knock, right? How many times have you prayed? Have you prayed, just heal them, cure them? And that doesn't work out. It happens. It happens. And now what? If we see this passage as that, as a vending machine, where we put the money in and we get everything we ever asked for, this is really, really hard. So, let's talk about what it actually is. There's two ways to see this passage. Is this about us and God, or is this about us and each other? And the answer to that, like so much else in the Bible, is yes. Is it about us and God, or is it about us and each other? Yes, it is. Yes. Okay? So today, we are going to unpack us and each other. Okay? Now, this is moving. If you know anything about the scriptures, if you've been here long enough, you see that all of these things tie together. These things have a thread. There's nothing random about this. We have a God of order. So chapter 6 is about worry and how we attempt to control our own circumstances, right? It's asking us to trust. It's saying, well, don't worry. God clothes the birds. God clothes the flowers. How much more valuable are you, right? So that's how we try and control our own circumstances. Then chapter 7, we move into judgment and pearls before pigs, which is how we try and control each other. Okay, judgment is through negative means. Pearls to pigs are through positive means. It's how we try and manipulate, how we try and force others to do what we want in unhealthy ways. Right? Again, it's also asking us to trust, to entrust. Chapter 6 is asking us to entrust God with us. Chapter 7 so far has been the way that we ask, that God asks us to, we entrust God with them and their journey. So, the question that we have right now is, how do we actually relate in a healthy way to each other? Right? Because now I know what not to do, and I don't know how to do that. Because I try and control everything. I want you to do exactly what I want you to do. I want you to do it this way because I just want you to do it this way. We always have this joke in our house. Angel knew the way to make a peanut butter sandwich. And not everybody makes a peanut butter sandwich that way. Yet, she had the right way. And if you don't do it that way, you were wrong. Now, a little side note. She's absolutely right. There is a better way to make a peanut butter sandwich. But there was this moment where we had to realize that there are more than one way to make a peanut butter sandwich. And this is what we're learning with each other. When we entrust that Samuel can make a peanut butter sandwich, not doing it my way, metaphorically, then we start to entrust him and his life to God, which opens all kinds of things up. Right? And it allows a healthy way. So the question is, how do we do it? I know what not to do. What do I do? And the way that we relate to each other in a healthy way, the answer is in the ask. In the ask. It's a humility. It is a deep, deep humility spoken out of a lack. what it does, and when I say this, you're not going to like it. You're not going to like it. You're going to tense up a little bit and go, hey, I don't like this at all. It gives the other person the power. That's exactly what you are giving them the power. There's no coercion. There's no manipulation. You are just handing the power over. It's just an expression of need or desire where somebody else can help you. Now it gets tough for the rest of the day, because how are we with that? How are we with that? Has anybody ever said the words, I hate to ask you, but ... Is that just me? Do you really hate to ask? And why? Why would you actually hate to ask? I'm sorry to ask. Really? Doesn't it feel like we should hate things like racism, sexism, violence, not asking me to pick up milk, right? How about, let's have a deal. Let's strike those words from our vocabulary. Let's never say, I hate to ask, but, ever again. Okay? Because we don't. And if we do, then we have work to do, right? How about, it's a payback situation. I'll get you next time. Has anybody ever said that? If I buy you lunch, do you say, I got you next time? Because we can't just receive. I don't just need or want anything. We have to be in a reciprocal relationship, a transaction, right? Or how about you don't even bother to ask because I'm sure they're too busy. I'm sure they're too busy. Oh, they have so much going on, I don't want to even ask them. How about if you have to move? Has anybody ever had? I know it's just me talking. I know nobody's putting their hands up. I got it. It's just me. But this is really my life. I'm sorry. So we're just talking about me today. Did anybody ever have to move? And you're thinking about who I can ask to help me move. And you go, well, I can't ask them because they have so much going on. Well, I can't ask them because their back is sore. Well, I can't ask them because I know that they'll have this going on. Well, I know that that. Right? It is a human and very much an American disease of rigid independence. Independence. I can do it. It's written right into the American theology. Pull yourselves up by your bootstraps. Right? And there's value. There's value in it. I'm not saying there's not. But when that becomes the guiding light that we live our lives by, something is lost because it elevates something called pride, doesn't it? And pride is awfully closely linked to a word in the Bible that starts with an I, and it rhymes with fridolatry, right? Because pride is essentially, your idol is yourself. I can do it myself. I can do it myself. I don't need anybody. I don't need anybody else. I don't care what anybody thinks. I can do it myself. Have you ever heard that? Just me. It's just me. I know. Okay. This is why we don't share our hurts. This is why we don't share our problems. It's why we hide those things and we pretend. We put on masks that make us perfect. We have perfect teeth, perfect hair. Churches are the place where it should be the most messy, and churches are often the place where it is the most fake. Has that been any of your experience? To tell you the truth, it hasn't really been mine. I've been a part of two really, really great churches that were messy. Messy. So, but that's why we don't tell, we don't allow, we aren't vulnerable, we don't show any kind of lack. We want to have it all together, right? Flawless. Jesus called this whitewashed tombs. It's perfect on the outside, full of dead men's bones on the inside. Right? This is why we don't tell stories in progress. This is why the stories that we tell go, man, I was really going through something. But I'm not anymore because I fixed it. And we might put a spiritual spin on it and go, God helped me out of that. But mostly I don't need you because I can work it out. That's why the stories that go, I'm really going through something now, are so sacred. Have any of you ever been on the other side of those words? Man, I'm going through it right now. I just got to ask, if you hear those words, see them for what they are. That is a sacred space. That is church, man. That is church. There is nothing closer that we can do. That is such an expression of humanity. It's the best. It's the best. But mostly we tell the story, I went through something. Imagine this. If I needed help in the middle of the night, would you help me? I'm going to look every one of you in the face. Would you help me? Nobody's doing anything. Would you help me, Jim? Yeah. Thank you. Would you help me, Jim? If I called you in the middle of the night, would you come and help me? Wiccanizer, would you help me? See? That guy. Okay. The thing is, you'd probably all say yes, just the same as I would say yes to you. Right? What if you found out I was going through it? We had a thing that happened, and I didn't call you. What if I sat in pain all night, not wanting to call you because I thought you were too busy or had too much going on? Here's my story. A couple of months ago, this is where you come into this. A couple of months ago, I got a call, nine-ish. I get a phone call. And there's no lead up. Will you go to my house right now? From G. And I said, absolutely. Absolutely. As I'm on the phone, I'm putting my shoes on. And I said to my wife, put your shoes on, man. We got stuff to do. As it happened, there was a broken window and G was in the hospital. Okay? So we went to her house and we cleaned up the glass. And then I went to the hospital, and I sat with her, and then I brought her home. This is not because I'm awesome. This is because we love each other. This is because we're friends, and we're in relationship, and she didn't pause. I hope you didn't pause to call me. I hope she just goes, Chad's the one, because let me tell you this, sister. If I had found out she sat in that hospital the next day, we would have a real problem, because then I am forced to wonder, what are we doing here with this relationship? I thought we were much, much closer than this, right? Have you ever been in this situation? Oh, you moved? You didn't ask me? Look at me. I'm built to move. I'm built to move stuff. Lindsay, I'm talking to you. I'm built to move stuff, and she's about to move, and if she doesn't ask me, I will start to wonder what kind of friends we are. When you find things out about people, that's the story. When they hide things, when they don't come through. The next day, GC calls me and says, will you pick up my medicine? I went and picked up her medicine because we're friends like that. We're in relationship like that. I'm going to move Lindsay whether she asks me or not. Because we're friends like that, right? If they don't call, if they don't ask, that hurts, right? If I got here and said, man, last night was a terrible night. It was a terrible night. And you would say to me, why didn't you call me? Why didn't you call? If we were honest enough with each other, you'd say, why didn't you call me? Right? And I would have no answer. What if you found out something terrible or awesome happened to me and you didn't know about it? Right? Right? Our relationship might be based in something else, right? Now, sometimes it takes time, right? Sometimes we just meet each other. And it takes time until I get, look at all of you. You all are the most wonderful people in the world, and I don't get through the whole list, right? But I'll tell you everything. I'll tell you everything. I'll ask you everything. But if we're pretending, if we're wearing these masks, our relationship is probably not based in mutual trust, mutual care, kindness, respect, or love, is it? I know it's tough questions. I know it's tough questions, but ask yourselves that question. It's the truth. It's the truth. At least not yet, right? But that's where we're moving to. That's where we're moving to. When we don't ask, we think they're too busy or whatever. We think we're being nice or polite, or we think we're just thinking about them and being kind and careful with them. Are there any of those things in Jesus' parable of the super annoying friend? Is there politeness in that at all? What a relationship. Bang, bang, bang. I need some bread. Get out. Get out of here. I'm not opening the door. Bang, bang, bang. I really need it. No. We're all in bed. Leave. Bang, bang, bang. Okay. There's no kindness. There's no politeness. Nobody's nice here. It's shameless audacity. The truth is, it's actually because we don't want to be rejected, because we're not actually giving the power to them. God bless. That was the cutest. Okay. So we're not actually giving them the power. We need them to say yes in the middle of it, right? We're not actually allowing them to be what they are or who they are. We're not allowing them to serve us. We're not allowing them to be them. But we don't want to be rejected. We don't want to be needed as, we don't want to be seen as needing anything. We don't want to be seen as needing anyone. We don't want to be seen as dependent on another person. Okay. The real issue. We don't want to give up control. Does anybody have an issue with control? That's why we don't ask. If I don't ask God, I don't know if he answered, and I don't know if he didn't. Right? I'm still in control. I don't have to deal with a no. I don't have to deal with you saying, no, I don't want to go out with you. Right? I don't have to deal with, when I asked Angel on a date, "Would you want to go on a date with me?" That's vulnerable. And it allows her to say, "No, I'm washing my hair," or whatever. It's an open space. It's an open space, and it gives her all the control. All of it. This sermon on the Mount, is in constant conflict with our need to control. Constant. Go back. At the end of our study on the Sermon on the Mount, go back and look at it. Every word of it is in a cage match with our control, with our idolatry, with our pride. The first words, "Blessed are the poor in spirit." I am not poor in spirit. What? I'm not a misfit. I have it all together. First word, theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Now what? You're going to have to chip that away. So now for three chapters, chipping it away. Just chipping it away. And now he says, ask, seek, and knock. Now he says, don't judge others to get them to do what you want. Don't give them nice things or lavish upon them to get them to do what you want. Instead, ask them. And mean it. How many times have you been asked and you don't really have a choice? I say to my boys, why don't you go clean your room? That's not an ask. Why don't you put the dishes away? That's not an ask. Will you please go to the store and pick up some milk? That's an ask. Because Samuel can say, no, old man, get it yourself. It's in a constant battle with our need to control ourselves, our relationships, others, and God. And God. The ask respects and loves the other so much, they now have the power. They can say yes. And they can say no. I know. If we take these things as with the weight that they actually have. You've heard ask, seek, and knock a million times. Yep. Think about it. Think about how much respect you have for someone and love when you ask them, will you do this for me? It's overwhelming. And we just treat it as nothing. And the fact that they can say no is super, super scary. I know. Our ability to love and truly love, agape love, is connected tightly to our ability to be vulnerable. These are tough. These are so, so tough. Because we get wounded by life and we say, I'm not opening for anybody else ever. Rah. How can I love anyone and how can anybody love me? There's an answer. They can't. How could I love G to sit with her in the hospital if she doesn't ask me? Right? If she's not vulnerable enough to ask me, how can I love her? How can she be loved? Can't. How can I love Lindsay if she doesn't allow me the opportunity to say, no, I won't move you. I can't move you. I don't want to move you. Because it's possible, right? It's possible someone will say, no, I don't want to. But if she loves me and respects me enough, I can say yes. Right? Those folks that build these walls up because of their lives where they've been hurt and hide behind them and say, I'm not doing that again. They stay behind them. You're there, but they're there. And nobody gets to love or have relationship ever. This is so tough. This teaching, sheesh. Right? Sheesh, it's heavy and it's hard, and it involves an invitation. Jesus is inviting us. Notice, he's asking. He's asking. How about that? He doesn't force us to love or follow him ever. Ever. That's what free will is all about. He's asking. He's giving us the respect and loving us so much. We can say no. We can turn our backs on him. Think about Christmas and Easter in light of all of this. He came all this way. Jesus came all this way, baby, lived, died a horrible death so that I can worship me. So that I can pretend he doesn't exist. So that I can hate him. Because he loves me so much and needs me to love him back. Wants me to love him back. Ah. He is inviting us to destroy the walls that we have built that keep everybody out, but they also keep us in. Lonely, alone, in solitude, celebrating by ourselves, crying in our rooms by ourselves. We think this is safely inside of our walls, and it's not. It's not. Inviting us to lay down our white-knuckled grip on everything. How about it? Anybody? Anybody? I gotta do this. I gotta keep it together. I gotta keep it together. I gotta hold on to everything and not allow anything to chance. Jesus is asking us to trust. That's it. Next week, we're going to talk about how this passage is about relating to God and us. And it doesn't get easier. I promise you it doesn't get easier, because there's a really, really huge question involved next week. The question today, think about, I know, this is dangerous. This, you all know, this is where Sam's like, when you put that book away, now nobody knows. The question today is what we think about each other. If we really believe we're made in the image of God, if we really believe that we're made for a relationship, if we really believe that it's not good for us to be alone, if we really believe that people are trustworthy and that we can respect and love them, those are all the questions today. If we can let them in, Even when they hurt us over and over and over and over and over. If we can be vulnerable with others. Next time, we ask those exact same questions of God. And if today was tough, those questions are even tougher. Amen.
Please stand.
See my hands and look at my feet. It's okay if it's hard to believe. Before I leave.